Hello and welcome to Mimi UU. I'm Mimi Nicklin, the host of the show. This podcast is anonymous and it's audio only, without names, to protect from unconscious bias or judgment and to allow true empathy to grow. The goal of the show is to share diverse stories from around the world by giving people a platform to share openly so that other people, like you, can understand diverse realities from around the globe. We exist to create empathy and not just talk about it. Welcome to Mimi UU. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Mimi UU, the podcast creating stories from all over the world so that we can empathize more with each other. One of my favorite parts of being the host of the show is that I get to hear firsthand the stories of women and men, but predominantly women who are doing the most phenomenal work in their communities, in their towns, in their work, with huge impact to all of those around them. For us, we often read about that in the newspaper, or we might hear it on a radio interview, but so many of these stories go untold, and those realities are very hard for us to step inside. So today's guest is joining me from Africa. You will hear later a little bit more from where. And she's going to share how her life was growing up and what she's seeing in her community, in her life, so that you can step into the shoes of someone very far from your own reality today. Before we kick off, I always like to remind our guest that this is an anonymous show and that we won't reveal your identity unless you choose to do so at the end of the show. Is that okay with you?
Sure, it's very okay with me.
Wonderful. Well, listen, thank you so much for coming. I know it's early where you are, and welcome to the Mimi UU show.
Thank you for having me here.
It's such a pleasure. I'm really looking forward to understanding your world a little bit more today and the life that you live and lead. So why don't you start just by telling us, why did you want to come on the show? What do you want other people around the world to understand about your story?
Okay, I want a lot of people to know where I come from, a little about my community. You know, a lot of us are from different parts of the world. So from where I come from, I wanted to share so people will know a little about my community, the things we face every day, and how we're able to cope some things out and what we're trying to do to make the society a better place. Because people from far and wild, wherever they are, when they hear about some parts of the world, they think, oh, it's all rosy, or maybe they are not doing very okay. So I wanted to share a little about what I experienced in my community while growing, and also every day when I encounter with young people while growing up. And, you know, I want people to hear about it. So when they have the opportunity to visit my community or Africa as a whole, they would appreciate the beauty of it, and there will be empathy when they see people around too. That's why I want to share my story.
Thank you. Thank you for wanting to share your story. We want to hear it too. And certainly from my point of view, I really want to understand that. Why don't you tell us a little bit about how you grew up and where you grew up so that we can imagine how your life began?
Okay. I grew up from a community in Africa, Nigeria to be precise, a little community where it was the survival of the fittest. You just have to get things done for you to be rewarded. No, growing up from a home, a polygamous home where you have a stepmom and other children trying to compete to get things from your dad, it wasn't very easy. So I grew up from that kind of home where you're struggling to get everything done, from education, from eating, from going out, everything. You just have to struggle. You just have to impress someone before you can get anything done. So that was how I grew up. So, and seeing other kids around me, everyone struggling for attention. everyone's struggling to meet ends meet because it was like a slum. So nobody cared. You just have to get yourself out of the slums, maybe via education or wherever you find yourself with mini trades. So that's the kind of community I grew up in. So I had to embrace mini trading, hawking on the streets to make sure I get out of the slums to be able to get a good education. So growing up in that kind of slum made me a bit very nervous. I was so scared of life. I was scared of going out to reach out to people. So I was so timid. Whenever I wake up in the morning, I have my bath, I want to go out. I'm like, please, Lord, help me. Nobody should see what I'm doing. So I had to run, practically running every morning when going to get things done because I'm like, okay, get this done. Go back, hide again in your shell, read your book, go back again. So it was a struggle. Having no one to talk to and the rest. So that was kind of community I grew up in. That was kind of family I had to grow up in. Everyone was quarreling, healing, you know, having one issue or the other to solve every day. But I kept saying, I'm going to get out of it.
Help us understand a little bit. When you talk about waking up anxious or scared or timid and, you know, running out and then running home and going back into your shell, for people that have never been to this part of Nigeria or Nigeria as a country, what was it that little girl was scared of? What made life scary? Help people understand that.
Yeah, okay. What really made life scary for me while growing up was the fact that you could go out this morning and you could get raped by a young boy trying to satisfy sexual urge in the community. So it was a bit scary for me. Also, having quarrels from stepmom to dad, it was, you know, the noise was a bit scary to me because I was very young. In fact, I think I'm the least in my family from the polygamous home. So it made me so scared of life that I felt like if I go out, anyone I see would hurt me, even when no one was going to hurt me. But because of the things I saw around me, I saw young girls trying to struggle, being raped, having a child out of wedlock at a very young age. So it scared me. I made a wall around that and it made me timid, even when some persons were there to help. But because of those things I saw, it made me timid and scared.
And tell us a little bit about households in your culture where there are, you know, one husband and two wives or three wives. Is that very common in Nigeria?
Yeah, it's really very common. It's very common in the South. It's very common in the West. It's very common there, yeah, having more than one wife, two, three. It's really common.
And how many children were in your household?
Okay, we had like 9 children in my household.
Wow. And do you feel close to those 9 siblings today? Did you have a good relationship?
Sure, I really built a very good relationship with them at some point. But while growing up, I didn't have that relationship because I was trying to protect myself from a lot. But when I understood life better, I was like, oh, no one is out here to kill you. You can, in anything, get better. So I really had a very good relationship with them while growing after a particular time.
So you grew up on the streets a little bit. You talked about, you know, trying to make some money, trying to find a way out of the slum and get yourself into education. How did you know as a young girl from a difficult background, how did you know that you needed to get into education?
Okay, one of the things I did was get acquainted with the news. So as a young girl, I had opportunities to go to some homes where they have a television set. So I was able to watch and see that, if you can do like this, if you can speak like this, if you can have an education, you'll be able to help others in your community. So at that age, when I saw it, I was like, wow, I'm going to have an education. At any cost, I'm just going to have an education, and I must have an education, and I must have an education. So I just kept that at the back of my mind. So while I was on the street hawking, I was selling bread, I sold in notes precisely. I just told myself, I must have an education. So my goal was not just to hawk those things, but my goal was to get money and have a good education. So that was how I knew about education, being able to help, because I was reading. Even while my sisters were in school, when they returned, I would read about it. Oh, this is physics. This is chemistry. Yeah, this is it. I'm going to have an education. So that was how I knew about education being one way to help me get things done.
I am so inspired by you. I'm just imagining you as a little girl looking at this TV and saying, you know, I will be educated and I will stop selling bread and start moving out into somewhere else in the world. I think it's a phenomenal vision that you had. So tell us, how did you do it? How did you go from selling bread and hawking to finding an education? And what education was it?
Okay. Yeah, actually, it was a bachelor's degree education I had first before, because I'm also putting in for my master's currently, right, to get funds for scholarships and other things to help me while I save also. So basically, it was a bachelor's degree in a university here in Nigeria. So I sold those bread. I had transport to go to my school, my local community school, from the primary. It's called primary here and secondary. I was able to go. I was very intelligent, so I skipped some class while in school. My teachers were like, okay, she doesn't need to do this class because she has known these things. So I had sisters that were way older than me. So whenever they returned from their schools, even though they don't enjoy going, I took their books. I'm like, what is this? Can I know what you learned? So by doing those things, I started enjoying what they learned. And on the way, I started teaching children around me what I don't even know about. So the bread I hawked and everything, it gave me money to go to school, like to transport me to my school every day. So when I hawk the bread, I get the money. I go to school. Of course, I go very late because I have to go hawk first. So I was enjoying it, you know. That was the best part of it. I was enjoying it because I had something to achieve at the end of the day. So that was how I was able to go through. When I got admission into the university, there was no money practically. So I had to find scholarships in Nigeria. And I go on. I was like, oh, so when I put my mind to something and I pray about it, it's going to work. So I even go one and then in school. So I use the scholarship through my university back here in Nigeria to go through everything. So that was how I was able to get a bachelor's degree in mathematics and statistics.
Oh my gosh. Honestly, now I'm even more inspired. I'm again imagining this little girl who's selling bread and working out all the change and all the money all alone to go to school, and then you get a scholarship for maths and what did you say? Maths statistics. And statistics. Oh yeah. My gosh. I mean, that is seriously academic achievement for a little girl that had very little support. Did you enjoy it? Did you love the degree?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I loved the degree, but there were a lot of challenges in our university here in Africa. It's like you just have to cram and get the things done, you know. Just we don't really understand some practical to what we learned. Just, you know, your theory, just go to class. So at some point it became like, wow, this is not what I expected. I expected more. So I quite enjoyed it though, but I wouldn't say I really, really enjoyed everything because, you know, as a little girl, seeing some things on TV, what I expected was more. But, you know, where you find yourself, the environment in university also differ. So I was just able to do, you know, get this thing, cram this thing, read this thing, put it in your head, have the book in your head. When you go to the example, just pour it out. So I didn't really like that kind of system. Yeah. It was a funny system, and that's why I'm really trying to do my best now, you know, to still further my academics out of the shores of Nigeria, because I really want to know more, you know, in the education space about other culture, how it's been done and everything. So it was a bit tense.
Go on. It was a bit tense.
It was a bit tense. you know, mixed feelings. You know, I had mixed feelings, you know, what you expected to get when you go to school and what you were getting. You know, you just have to put everything together in one way and like, okay, let's just do this. Let's do this. So it was quite...
So where did you live? Did you stay at home in the slum that you grew up with and travel to the university, or you moved for your university?
Oh, I moved to a new state for my university, which is also not very a good place. But of course, it's just what you have at the moment, so you just have to appreciate it. So, but I moved from where I was to a new state for the university.
And how was that? You were all alone, I'm imagining.
Yeah, it is quite difficult. It was quite difficult. You know, the first day in my university, I wouldn't forget, I had to sleep in the lecture theaters because I had no room to sleep. So, like I told you earlier, you know, the drive to keep going and you have something to achieve, education will help you get out of some bad thing to be able to communicate. Imagine I was not educated, I wouldn't be able to come on this show today to communicate, to tell you my story, because I won't be able to articulate these things and put them together to share. So I think no matter how the education was, I really appreciate it. And I'm grateful I did. And I want to do more. And that was how I fell in love with joining some NGOs, social service work, to help the community I find myself, wherever I find myself. That was how I started it.
And tell me, when you remember back to sleeping in the lecture hall because you had nowhere to go home, you said to me, you have to, you know, keep focused on your drive, keep focused on your goal. But again, as a young girl, really, sleeping in a lecture hall, not knowing where you're going to be tomorrow, where does the drive come from? I understand you want to have education, but this takes a lot of resilience, a lot of patience, a lot of tenacity. So strength, where did your strength come from?
Okay. One of the things I grew up as a child was I was being taken to a church, a local church, you know, reading the Bible. The Bible is telling you all things are possible if you believe, you love, you share, you give, you forgive. So the drive came from knowing God at an early age and also knowing where I'm coming from, that if I don't get this done, there are a lot of persons out there that wouldn't have the courage to also go out and do something. Because I didn't tell you, as at a young age, around 3-4, I was already teaching my classmates. Even if I wasn't teaching them good things, maybe the little rubbish or something that I knew, I was already teaching them. I was like, okay, come, let's go outside. We'll sit down. I'm going to have like 2-3 chairs on top. I'll stack them together and I'll start pointing the board. I said, let's get this thing done. I'm like, and people were like, what's she doing again? Well, you know, the children were very happy. So I remembered things when I was in school. So even while I never had a hostel, I slept in the lecture theaters. I'm like, we have some persons back home. Be motivated and inspired to also want to go out no matter where they find themselves. So those are some of the things. Apart from me wanting to get an education, I knew in my home, like, I'll be the first to be educated, like, to really get that kind of education where I'm going to have a bachelor's degree, because a lot of my sisters dropped out after their secondary school. So those are some of the things too.
And what did your father say when you told him you wanted to go to university and, you know, go into full higher education? What did your father think of that?
He was so proud of me. He was like, oh, that's nice, but there is no money. How is it going to be? Like, I'm going to go anyway. Whether there is money or not, I'm going to go anyway. So I didn't care about it. Yeah.
You knew you'd find a way.
Exactly. I just knew that I would find a way. I see people being happy, saying they got something. But like, I just knew I'm going to find a way. It's a big world. Some person's going to love me and help me. And I'm going to be very nice, but I'm going to meet some nice ones. So
So tell me about some of the nice ones. You were at university. I'm sure in that time you met some people that helped you along the way. Can you remember some of the people that were kind to you, that helped you in that journey?
Yeah, I could remember some of them. Yeah, like the people that gave me scholarship, Chevron and Shell. Chevron, you know, they have also, yeah, a branch here in Nigeria. So they were kind enough to, you know, give me the scholarship. A friend of mine saw me in campus. I was like, gold, there is scholarship going on. I was like, wow, I would want to apply. What does it take? And it was the last day for the applications. And the brother was like, no problem. Can I have all your stuffs? I said, yeah, sure. I gave him all my documents. And I never expected. I just gave him the documents. And like, oh, please help me. Scan this thing, send it to the mail. Because I didn't have a computer as a then to be able to do that. But he worked in a computer center. So he took everything. And I'm very grateful to the young man. He did everything. He scanned it. He sent it to the mail. And after 7-8 months, someone came again to me. I saw your name in a newspaper. You're writing an exam. I was like, wow, what exam? You're writing a scholarship exam. I was like, wow, when did I apply again? Boom. So it was, I had some bad data. I'm like, okay, somebody helped me. I was excited. So I met some people like that. I helped on the way. And, you know, even while I slept in the lecture theater, I had some friends that were in hostel. I had to go meet him. I told them about the situation I was in. Some took me into the hostel. Okay, just freshen up, get these things done. So I was grateful to meet those persons. And I also met a childhood friend that accommodated me all through my 4 years in school. She was like, wow, God, we have a place we're living. Can you come live with us? I said, sure. So I went there. I lived with them free of charge for the 4 years.
Wow. Isn't that wonderful that people will support you when you needed it most? So how long did you sleep in the lecture hall before you stayed with your friend?
Okay, I slept for 3 days. But that was before I met her. I was going to the hostel in the morning. I'll drop my things in the hall, the big hall. They call it common room here. I'll just live there. I'll just get into the bedroom because it's a female hostel. So every female is allowed to go in except the room. So I'll just drop my things. I'll say, please, can I drop my things here? I had few luggages. I didn't even have much, so it wasn't a big deal. So I'll drop the luggages. I'll go to the bathroom where other girls are. Just take my bath. I'll go back again. So after staying in the lecture hall for 3 days, pretending to be reading overnight, I'll go back again. So I stayed in the hostel too for a week. Quoting with other ladies, you know, the hostels here can accommodate 8-10 persons, even if it's so small. So imagine people are coming to say, please, I don't have where to stay. Can I sleep here? And sometimes you just stand all through the night. I remember there was a night I stood all through in the hostel because it was so filled. Like, I just have to.
That there wasn't even any room for you to sit down.
There was no room to sit down. Like, in a small bed, we have 2 persons already on it. On the floor, we have 5 persons already. Ooh. Wow.
And all these women are all young women who want to get an education. So they're sleeping 7-8 people in a tiny room.
Exactly, exactly.
Just all my to change their lives. How old were they? How old were they at this age?
Some of them were 16, 15, 17, 18, 19. Some were much older. Because I got into school around age 19. Okay. So a lot of persons were there. We just want, just from age 18 down to age 20. So that's how young everyone was. Or 16.
I think, 20. You know, for people in perhaps more Western markets, you know, going to university, doing your studying, passing your exams, that's difficult. Even when you have comfort, you have a home, you have a bathroom, you have money to buy food and all of those things. So the fact that you and all of your fellow women around you were able to get your degrees whilst living in such difficult environments, I think it's an incredibly, incredibly inspiring story. Tell us how it ended. So you did your 4 years. You passed all this phenomenal maths and statistical analysis. I can't even imagine. Like, I can barely add up. What did you do with it? Did you get a job? What happened next?
Oh, actually, I didn't get a job. It's so bad. You can't just get a job here like that in Nigeria. You just have to know someone to know someone, you know, to get a job. So it's another story, because after going through the rigorous training for 4 years, coming out home and you're looking for a job and you can't find one. You can only find a primary school teaching job where you just go teach community children some basic things, and it wasn't very easy. I had to, ask myself, if I sit at home, I wouldn't make anything. So I started volunteering for community services with NGOs, just free voluntary work to help them get children educated a bit and the rest. So I couldn't get a job. So right now, I
couldn't freelance online.
I couldn't get a job. So I just saw myself working with NGOs. Even though I had some persons I wanted to help me, but some phone, they couldn't anymore. So I just kept going. And my dad was sick at some time, and my mom, my parents were very sick. So I had to, since doing anything, I had to go back to the state where my parents were, start, you know, taking care of them for like 2-3 years before they passed away. So it wasn't very easy. So I was like, whoa, yeah. Once done, keep going, wouldn't stop. So it wasn't easy. I couldn't get a job, actually, and just kept volunteering for community services and working with NGOs.
And how were you funding, how were you buying food or paying for accommodation in those years when you didn't have work?
Oh, okay. I didn't pay for accommodation. I lived with some of my elder sisters in their homes. Yeah, I go from one to another. Just, okay, let me just stay here for a while. Then I returned back to my parents' house also, you know. They were able to have a little home they built for themselves so I could stay with them there in a detached house, you know. Yeah, but that was their own. They were not paying any money, so I was comfortable there, go out. So that was how I now saw a multi-level marketing firm that came to Nigeria. Like, they said, oh, you're going to make money. Come join us. I'm like, wow, are you serious? So I joined the multi-level marketing firm because I couldn't get a job. Well, I learned a lot from them, leadership, not being timid anymore, you know, some marketing skills, learn how to talk to people out there, not being shy. So it was like a family. When they see us in the morning, when I go to the office, they're like, when you come to the office, no matter what you've gone through, just drop it at the door. Tell yourself, I'm alive this morning. I'm awake. I'm going to get things done. So you notice the kind of motivational speeches and the rest. So it changed my head. I'm like, okay. So even if I'm not okay, when I get there, they told me, Gold, you're okay. I said, yeah, I'm okay. So they made me see another family I never had. They embraced me, even though I really didn't make a lot of money like I expected from there, with the love, the peace, the harmony, the empathy they have for others and everything, the welcoming, it made me feel at home and I was very happy. So that's how I did.
Are you still there or you finished that job?
Oh, I actually finished the job. You know, this part of the country where I am, a lot of fraudulent things happen. Even though it starts at a very clean slate, at the end of the day, you see someone trying to cheat you and, you know, trying to smuggle out money from you that you're trying to save. So at some point, I noticed the company was a very genuine company, but Nigerians running it here, people I was working with, they said doing some fraudulent acts. And after squandering my money, I had to like, wow, this is what they really do. So I had to quit. I quit. And I worked with an NGO.
Okay.
I saw around me, yeah.
So tell us about your work with the NGO.
Oh, it's really amazing because you get to see people every day, young people like you, that I knew the shoe you were in and everything. So my work with NGO, I actually went there to learn fashion designing, because I asked myself, okay, where I'm coming from, if I'm going to make ends meet again, make money to further my education, I need to have a skill. So someone brought the form and said, good, have you heard about this NGO? Like, oh, where are they? And it's close to the house. It's just some drive away. I was like, okay, I could go there. So I got there, being educated, you know, even if it's mixed, even if you're not educated, everybody was just mixed, young, old, everyone there. So when I got there, I was like, okay. I met them. I like, I want to learn fashion. And they said, okay, you can learn fashion. So, but when they saw that I was really, really educated, I was not, you know, the kind of community that the place is situated is a bit like a slum. So the owner facility is a PhD holder. She's a doctor. She fell in love with me. And after I finished the 3 months training, I was employed. And I had to start making little change. I could have money to go home, return, eat, and the likes. I could give my mom, oh, mom, this money. Okay, so I was able to give people. Oh, sorry, at that then my parents had already passed on. It was my sisters. I was able to give something. So that was how I fell in love with the NGO. And I went back to my local church, told them about the NGO. I brought a lot of young girls, teenagers. I took them to the NGO, come and learn skills for free. Come and learn computer appreciation. Come and learn electrical wiring, cosmetology. Just a little bit about those things. You know, they might not be able to teach everything, but the introductory section, they were able to. So a lot of teenagers in my church benefited from the NGO. I didn't stop. I went out again to the slums everywhere. Like, come learn, come learn. This is free. So even the doctor that owned the place was like, wow, God, where have you been all this while? We never saw you. Like, okay, I've been trying to get a job and it was further my career. That was how I started working with them. I was like the secretary and I was in charge of the project management in a little way, you know? Yeah, so I started doing those things. I made sure students had every materials needed because they were all free, provided by the doctor herself. Everything was free for the community children. We just have to get them to come learn. So I made sure I went outside. So whenever I go to my local church, every child in my local church, every teenager had a skill, you know, I think, oh, I can sew. I can do this. I can do that. I'm like, oh, that's nice. So yeah, my pastor was very proud of me. He was like, oh, thank you so much. My son can do some electrical wirings at home now. We don't need to pay for it. My daughter can bake a cake. And I thought, oh, that's nice. So yeah. I was excited about these things happening around my community.
Yes, I can imagine. I can imagine how rewarding that is. And again, just all these children saying, you know, now I can sew or I know how to bake. These are skills that they can use to change their lives. So
yeah, exactly. They were able to use it to get some money.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So let's talk a little bit before we finish about, you know, the part of Nigeria you live in. How do you feel about the future? Does the future look hopeful for Nigeria? Do you think these realities you've been through are going to change? What do you want people to understand about life in Nigeria today and where it's going in the future?
Wow. Life in Nigeria today, it's even extremely harder than I thought. Like right now, everything is high. The cost of living is very, very high. You just have to keep going. Life in Nigeria right now, this 21st century, is really, really harder than even while growing up. So, but I think there is hope. There is hope because a lot of Nigerians right now, they are really going on getting an education, master's degree to PhD. We have a lot of them trying to, you know, have a startup in the fintech space, even in the health sector space. A lot of young ones are really into it. And right now, the education system is far better. We have some good private universities that are doing awesome. So I think there is hope. I think there is hope for Nigerians. especially some of them that are really, really, really out of the country abroad. They do a lot. They return back home once in a while to social help. They have a lot of startups in Nigeria trying to get things done. So I think that's how things are changing. Though things are really on the high side, cost of living is so, so high right now, presently. It would hardly eat if you don't have money. Like, you just have to just have something doing. If not, you go to the market with some particular amount of money, you can't get anything. Mm-hmm. People are complaining. You know, there's something they call jackpot. Like, people are leaving the country out to other countries like Canada, UK, US to get to make ends meet right now. People are really doing that. Even right now, the cost of living is so high that people that want to even go out of the country can't even go. They're just trying to make ends meet. Thank God for the IT space right now. So we can comfortably be in our homes and, you know, talk to someone abroad with your skills, make money through freelancing, through all the online platforms we have today, LinkedIn and Co. So I think there is hope. So I think things are going to get better, but at least, but for now, they are really in a bad condition. But I think there's hope. There's hope.
There's always hope, right?
There's hope.
I want to ask you one last question, which is, what's your dream now? What's the next step for you? What do you dream of doing?
Okay. Like I told you earlier, the next step for me is to get another education, like master's degree in probably data science and finance. You know, I've been trying to use my computer, you know, get online Coursera. I take some data analytics courses online, learning Python and some programming languages. So my next step is to, you know, get everything I need, like papers, visa ready to, you know, further my education, do a master's degree, get a PhD too in that same line, then return back home because I plan on having a startup where I'm going to be able to, you know, empower young girls, teenagers, and women-led businesses, small-scale businesses. I'm going to help them that, you know, you can be a teenager and you're cool. You can still learn how to code. You can still learn a Python language. You can learn how to use the internet very well because right now, there is this mediocrity all around. You know, you have a phone, it's just TikTok, Facebook, you know, that's what they do here. You know, those kids laugh, you know. So there's this mediocrity all around. So my next step is to get another education for a master's degree, which I'm trying to work on some things right now. Then after that, get a PhD. But in doing so, I still have a community where I train some teenagers and women-led businesses because financial literacy here is really down. So the one they really need to know about financial literacy and the rest and know how to judiciously use the internet to make things. So make ends meet here.
So amazing.
That's my next step.
Well, I am incredibly inspired by your story. I think that your focus and your commitment to creating change and to leading the journey, you know, to the place in life where you want to be. I'm so grateful that you came to share this with everyone today and wanted to share your story. At the very end of the show, we give our guests the opportunity to share their name and their location if they want to, or you can remain anonymous. Would you like to share your name today or do you want to stay without sharing?
Okay. It's something to sure.
You can choose. Some guests they like to share their name. Okay, go ahead.
All right. My name is Gold Firstman. And I'm from Nigeria, precisely Bayelsa State in Nigeria. I'm currently located in Ekiti State, west of Nigeria.
I love your name, Gold. What a beautiful name.
Thank you so much.
Gold, it's been an absolute pleasure to hear your story today. And to everyone who has tuned in and listened into this, I hope that this story has allowed you to create more empathy for other women around the world, for other people around the world, for the commitment and diligence it takes to really break through your upbringing and change your destiny. And of course, to understand a little bit more about the reality in Nigeria for many young people that are growing up and planning their futures in that country. So thank you very much for joining. Do find us across social media for new episodes. We will be bringing a couple out a month with new stories to ensure that you can empathize with different stories from all around the world. My name's Mimi Nicklin, and it's been a pleasure having Gold here with me today to share this story. Thank you for joining us today on Mimi UU. This episode is one in a series that has been designed to create empathy in our world. If you would like to join us on the show, please click on www.joinmimiuu.com or follow us across social media at Mimi UU Show. I believe that the more the world talks about empathy, the more empathy the world will have. And I hope that this show is the beginning of doing just that.